Hello and welcome to Volume 149 of Capital Ideas Live. In today's issue, we'll discuss the best time to plant seedlings. We'll discuss safety in the workplace for women who are pregnant. We'll discuss timber theft, and we'll check in on the timber market. This program is brought to you through the generous contribution of Forester Search, a service that makes it easier to connect landowners with consulting foresters. You can access the site through foresterssearch.com, or there's a link on this page, and you'll be given a roster of consulting foresters who can guide you through the next steps you'll face as a forest landowner. I'm Hayes Brown with the Alabama Forest Owners Association, and I'll be your host for today's discussion. Pat Autry is a forestry consultant who's vigilant about protecting his clients from timber theft. We wanted to learn more about this from him. Welcome, Pat.
Good morning. Thank you.
What do you mean when you say the word timber theft?
Hey, I want to say that I'm no expert because I have not experienced a whole lot of timber theft, but I have seen it, you know, from a distance. But the definition is the act of taking timber or forest products without authorization or consent, and it's also with intent. There's two types, I guess, of timber theft. There's the unintentional and the intentional. And when you say the word theft, it seems sort of harsh, and it should be. But I do think there's two different kinds, and where both of them should be, you know, punished in some sort of fashion, whether fined or a harder punishment, I guess they're both considered timber theft.
Okay. One could be unintentional, just cutting over a line, but other could be outright taking, you know, kind of more along the lines of a criminal activity. When do you think this type of activity is most likely to take place?
Normally when there's boundaries that are not understood or marked real well, and it could also be just a lack of professionalism or a lack of a contractual agreement between the landowner and a wood buyer. I guess sometimes it can also be from just lack of keeping good records. And, you know, these are things that I include in my practice. I try to check all the boxes to keep this from happening.
Why don't you give us some tips that you found are helpful in preventing timber theft?
To landowners, there's a lot of landowners out there now that are absentee or that really have not owned land before. And I just encourage them to know their property. Two of the main principles that I'd like to preach, I guess, is know your boundaries, have them marked well, and also have good access over your property. but there's other things you can do, too, and that's cultivate good neighbors, and they, you know, kind of keep an eye on each other's property. First and foremost, I guess I should have mentioned this first, is hire a consulting forester. Hire a professional that deals with handling timber and managing timberland on a regular basis. And preferably a consulting forester who's a member of the ACF, the Association of Consulting Foresters, as I am. There are a lot of good consulting foresters out there, but those who are members of the ACF are held to a higher ethical standard. And the other thing is, when you do sell timber, know what you have before you sell it. Just be knowledgeable about the contract and let the consultants on the best way to sell the timber. Make sure you understand the contract and keep good records.
Okay. All right. Well, that's some good advice, Pat. We thank you for that.
Thank you.
Does it really matter when you plant your seedlings as long as it's somewhere between November and March? Paul Jeffries, reforestation advisor for ArborGen, thinks so. Welcome, Paul.
Good morning, Hayes. How are you doing?
You're an advocate of not waiting to the end of that period. Why do you think bare root seedlings should be planted early in that cycle?
Well, Hayes, bare root seedlings in the past literature, it has shown that the planting window ranges from November to March. However, it's best to plant your bare root seedlings between December and the end of February. It typically takes a new seedling 4 to 6 weeks to begin growing new roots. And these new roots that they're putting on is very vital for the seedling's uptake of nutrients and moisture. So if you plant the seedlings earlier, you're giving the seedling a lot more time to establish itself, to get its new root growth started, so that when the warm weathers come in the early spring, March and April, the seedling is ready and established to wake up for the new growing season in what I call its final resting place.
Okay. Well, what happens if your planting contractor doesn't get to your small tract until late March?
Well, and that's a really good question. There's a few ways that you can fix that issue. One way is to ensure that your planting contractor is handling the seedlings properly, that they have been stored in a refrigerated area at the optimal temperatures to maintain dormancy. The other way that you can ensure that this is not going to be an issue is by instructing your planting contractor to plant the seedlings deeper. Trees that bare root seedlings, especially that are planted properly, should be planted deeper. That gives the roots a little bit of advantage in the getting them closer to the water table. Plus, as the soil begins to warm up in the spring, if the roots are planted deeper, the soil stays cooler longer at the lower depth.
Okay. Real quick, do you have any advice? Has any of this advice changed for containerized seedlings?
Well, for containerized, it's pretty much the same recommendation, except the planting window is a little longer. You have a little bit of leeway there simply because the containerized seedling is grown in its own soil media. And though the soil media that is used at the nursery for the containerized will have a slow-release fertilizer added to it, which will give the seedlings a little bit extra nutrients. So if they're planted earlier or a little later, they're not going to experience that much of a planting, what we call planting shock.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you, Paul. We appreciate that.
Thank you.
We've never discussed safety in the woods for those that are pregnant before, but we'd like to do that now. Nisha Rose Davison is Public Health Director for AgriSafe Network and can help us learn about this topic for ourselves or those that we love. Hello, Nisha.
Hi.
It's well known that the agricultural industry has a number of occupational hazards out there, but what should expectant mothers consider?
Absolutely. It's just kind of a known fact that during pregnancy, your immune system can be compromised as a result of your growing fetus, if you will. So you're kind of susceptible to certain diseases. When you're thinking about agriculture, specifically for forestry, I would say anything working with herbicides, pesticides, and any chemicals, you want to be mindful of what that exposure is. Some things even have a period of time that before pregnancy, up to 2 years, even before you even consider pregnancy, could have an impact on your fertility. So anytime you're working with any type of chemicals, you want to be sure to read that safety label And the best thing that you can do is wear personal protective equipment from head to toe to, you know, make sure that you're reducing your exposure to not cause any other concerns.
Okay. The Google machine defines zoonotic diseases as those from animals to humans. What are some examples of zoonotic diseases that affect a woman's pregnancy?
There are many. About 75% of all emerging new diseases are zoonotic in nature. So think about things when you're outdoors. You would think about insect-borne diseases like Zika virus, for example, was something that spread and could really impact pregnancy and impact the shape and development of the head of an infant. So you want to think about that for zoonotic. There are a number of other diseases that kind of more align with caring and animal husbandry and birthing of animals. So with cattle and sheep and swine and things like that. But if you're not coming into contact with bodily fluids of animals, that's not going to be a huge risk, but there are things that could get you sick if you're exposed to their bodily fluids, the urine, blood, or even some of the mucus. If you're, you know, not washing your hands or anything, if you're coming in close contact with those animals, you really want to be mindful of that.
Okay. Give us some practical examples for workplace safety during pregnancy.
Absolutely. So, again, outdoors for insect safety, for example, you want to make sure that you're wearing insect repellent. You want to make sure that you're wearing good clothing to cover your arms, legs, things like that for, you know, tick prevention, you know, wearing pants and pulling your socks over the bottom of your pants so insects don't get exposure, but also things like personal protective equipment, making sure that you have a respirator or gloves or safety goggles if needed, just to kind of think about what your exposure is, reading labels, and then thinking about not only your clothing but personal protective equipment on top of that to keep you safe while you're working.
All right. Well, thanks, Nisha. We appreciate that. Harrison Hood is with TimberMart South, and he's in our Timber Markets Chair. Welcome, Harrison.
Thank you for having me.
So what's the update on timber prices?
So looking at timber prices, particularly, you know, in Alabama, you know, the last couple quarters, prices have been on the rise. There's been a couple of tropical storms and seasonably wet conditions that have constrained some of the wood supply and cost prices to increase, but really over the last, you know, year plus since COVID hit, you know, strong demand in the wood product industry has been a positive, you know, from a timber price perspective, you know, particularly mm-hmm. the pine saw timber stumpage prices, you know, over the last year, they're up, you know, 9% in Alabama, about $2 per ton, you know, and chip and saw prices are up, you know, more than $3, more than 20%, you know, over the last, you know, 6 to 8 months. You know, pulpwood prices, they're also continue to improve. They've been on the rise, you know, for the last 4 to 6 quarters. And, you know, year over year, they're actually 44% in Alabama, which is great. And kind of lastly, thinking about hardwood saw timber prices, you know, Alabama's, you know, historically had a strong, solid hardwood market, and prices for hardwood saw timber continue to hold strong in Alabama. You know, compared to the rest of the U.S. South, prices are, you know, 40% higher in Alabama and 20% higher in the northern portion of Alabama. So I think there's good signs, and prices are trending upwards, which is great to see. And with, you know, the fourth quarter here and wet conditions continue to persist, you know, I think that bodes well for landowners and stumpage prices.
Mm-hmm. Did you mention hardwood pulpwood? What's going on with it?
Yeah, hardwood pulpwood, it's trending similarly to pine pulpwood. It's mm-hmm. holding strong, too. Most, you know, pine and hardwood pulpwood prices have both kind of been on the rise since late 2020. And, you know, they've both seen some positive gains.
All right. Well, there's some good news for a change. Are there any projects such as like mill expansions and other things that we should be aware of?
Yeah, there's a couple that are big and I think that are important for a lot of Alabama landowners. One of them, two sawmills in particular. One is the Westerville sawmill in Thomasville. It started up in the first quarter. That mill's got, 250 million board feet of capacity. And I think it'll definitely, you'll see some positive changes in this market as that area kind of with more demand, for, saw timber grade and chip and saw wood. And then the other, sawmill this has been announced, several quarters ago was the Mission Forest Products, sawmill. It's actually a new sawmill that's in Corinth, Mississippi, which is, the northeast corner of Mississippi. They're putting in a 250 million board foot mill, the startup plan for 2022. So, that northwest corner of Alabama should be very beneficial to that market, provide some great outlets for wood in those areas. And also, from like a pulper perspective, Enviva, they've got a proposed mill that's going in Epps and Sumter County. And then you've got Enviva that's got another mill that's near startup in Lucedale, Mississippi, which will impact the southwest markets of Alabama. I think those will add a lot of demand for pulpwood, which would provide a great outlet for landowners for their pulpwood for thinning and other harvests. So I think those really stand to benefit landowners moving forward, especially as those projects come online and get completed.
All right. Well, thank you, Harrison. We appreciate that. And that's all the time we have for this issue. Our thanks go to Pat Autry, Paul Jeffries, Nisha Rose Davison, and Harrison Hood. You may not know this about me, but my uncle is a large timberland owner. In fact, he owns more timberland than anyone in the U.S. He's literally sitting on a gold mine of timber, and yet he won't cut any of it. He doesn't have to, because he has the power to coerce his neighbors to pay for his own forest management cost. His name is Sam. It's not news that the taxpayers have largely paid for the cost of forest management on public land. As strange as this sounds, this method of paying for cost has skyrocketed last week with the passage of the $1.2 trillion infrastructure bill. $500 million for mechanical thinning and timber harvesting in an ecologically appropriate manner, $500 million for establishing wildfire control locations, $200 million for constructing the removal of flammable vegetation on federal land, and $400 million for loan guarantees or low-interest loans for wood-using facilities that purchase byproducts of reforestation treatment. When it's all counted, new spending on the National Forest in the infrastructure bill is over $4.75 billion and counting. When the overall cost is $1.2 trillion, it's hard to get a perspective. It's kind of like counting the stars in the sky. So this fall, when there's a clear night, go outside, count the stars, and think of your Uncle Sam. On behalf of the Alabama Forest Owners Association, I'm Hayes Brown, thanking you for joining us for this issue of Capital Ideas Live.